Now serving the European double dip from APM. This is the Marketplace Midday Update podcast. I'm Jeff Horwich, and it is November 15th. Happy Thursday. Coming up, Europe is in recession again. Occupy Wall Street wants to help forgive people's debts, and they're getting there with techniques pioneered by Jerry Lewis. And the CEO of UPS talks about what it'll mean if he has to drive those big brown trucks over the fiscal cliff.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
As we get started here, just a quick bulletin on this big news of the day, which broke just as we were getting our last show to air this morning. British oil giant BP has agreed to pay $4.5 billion to the U.S. government as a penalty for its role in the 2010 Gulf oil spill. It's the largest criminal penalty in U.S. history. BP also pleads guilty to 11 felony counts related to the deaths of crew members. Elsewhere in the news this morning, the data delivered some news that common sense pretty much prepared us for some time ago. Europe is now officially back in recession. Economic output from the countries on the euro shrunk for two quarters in a row. The previous recession was only in 2009. Adolfo Laurenti is deputy chief economist at Mesirow Financial in Chicago, and he's with me now. Buongiorno.
Good morning.
Finally, confirmation of the double dip in Europe. Anything in here particularly striking to you?
Well, not the recession. As you mentioned, we saw this coming for quite some time. Maybe what is most surprising is how this problem is not just for Spain, Italy, Greece, the southern countries, but it's really beginning to affect what we consider a healthier economy in Germany and France. So going forward will be really interesting to see if this renewed economic uncertainty will change the policy tune in Berlin and induce Angela Merkel to reconsider the harsh austerity measure that she has been trying to impose on the rest of the Eurozone.
Right. Here in the U.S. this morning, we've got last week's jobless claims, and we got a good-sized bump in those of people filing for unemployment from Superstorm Sandy. What's your take on the economic impact of Sandy when everything shakes out here?
Well, we are going to see a lot of volatility in the data in the coming weeks. I think so, retail sales, personal income, construction spending, and some of these data may be looking good on the surface because they will show an increase in spending, but make no mistake, this will be very bad for the economy. This is what economists call the broken window fallacy. The money spent to repair damages will not spend for the holiday season or for future consumption. So a lot of people are not really going to be happy about their economic position in the aftermath of the hurricane.
Adolfo Laurenti, deputy chief economist at Mesirow Financial. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, and let's do the numbers. So far this morning, we are playing out the same pattern we have seen just about every day this week, I think. A decent or maybe just a flat start within a couple hours turns into a down day on Wall Street. The Dow at this hour is down about 0.5%, and the same story for the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ. The Labor Department says consumer prices barely rose last month. Within that, though, interestingly, the cost of housing increased the most it has in 4 years. If you're looking for a stock to watch today, check out Walmart. The world's largest retailer is not surprisingly feeling the effects of the slowdown in other parts of the world, and so it's issuing a rollback of expectations with its latest earnings report. Walmart shares at this hour are down about 4%. A new report out today from two Washington think tanks shows that the wage gap between the rich and the poor continues to grow across the country. From our Wealth and Poverty desk, here's Chrissy Clark.
Income gaps have widened most in California, Connecticut, Massachusetts, New York, and Kentucky. But no state's been untouched, according to Doug Hall at the Economic Policy Institute. He co-authored the report.
In every state, the top grew, often much faster than the bottom.
But why does that matter? Mark Partridge is an economist at Ohio State University. He says a little inequality is a good thing for economic growth.
It provides incentives for innovation. It provides incentives for people to go out and get education or obtain more skills to start a business.
But Partridge says once you have too much inequality,
the system can become gamed. Instead of coming up with new innovation, the elite with all the wealth might use the political process to try to maintain their wealth.
By breaking things down state by state, the authors of today's study hope to give fodder to local lawmakers to take action against that threat. They suggest raising the minimum wage and a more progressive tax system, things that have gotten federal lawmakers in a whole lot of gridlock. I'm Chrissy Clark for Marketplace.
It has been more than a year now since Occupy Wall Street began trying to draw attention to inequality with its debut in New York's Zuccotti Park. Since then, the movement's been trying out new initiatives. And tonight, it is an online celebrity telethon. Janine Garofalo among the celebrities, as I recall. The telethon is going to raise money to buy up and then pay off ordinary people's debts. It comes from an Occupy branch that's called Strike Debt, and they are calling this whole thing the Rolling Jubilee. Ann Larson is one of the organizers. Good to talk with you.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
So what's the basic premise here? How's this thing work?
Well, Rolling Jubilee is a project of Strike Debt, and we buy debt for pennies on the dollar, and instead of collecting it, we abolish it.
So what kind of debt are we talking about here?
Well, you can buy lots of different kinds of debt on this kind of shadowy speculative debt market, but right now we're focusing on medical debt. We believe nobody should go into debt for healthcare, the care that they need to stay healthy and to get the medicine that they need. And so we're focusing on medical debt right now, but lots of different kinds of debt, consumer debt, household debt is available on this market.
Now, you can't bail out everybody. I'm sure you might want to, but you can't. It seems to me you put yourselves in kind of an awkward situation because you have to choose whose debt you relieve. How do you do that?
Actually, we don't choose. We don't know much about the people whose debt we purchase in advance. You know, debts are bundled and sold as part of a portfolio.
Uh-huh.
And this is, you know, this is part of the whole kind of shadowy speculative market that we're trying to expose here is our debts are bought and sold every day on this speculative market. And the people who do this buying and selling don't really know anything about who we are, and they can't even many times confirm that the debt is actually owed. These are really just alleged debts.
What's the message that you're sending here, though? I mean, I would love for someone to pay off my credit card, but people take on debts. They should pay them, right?
Well, not necessarily. There's an element of mutual aid where we are trying to give people some relief and stop harassing calls from collectors. But this is really not about that primarily. It's about exposing the debt system and how it works. These debts that we're purchasing have been written off already by the large lenders. They've been sold on the secondary market. And when banks write down that debt, they can write it off their taxes as well. And then they turn around and sell it to debt buyers. So they're making money on both ends. And, you know, somebody's debt is somebody else's profit. And we just don't think people should be going into debt for things like healthcare, education, and housing. And many people are doing that now. I mean, we have a $1 trillion student debt crisis. Two-thirds of all bankruptcies are linked to medical debt. I mean, these are basic needs that people should have provided for them, and they're going into debt for it, and that's the system we want to expose.
This will be interesting to watch. Ann Larson with Strike Debt and the Rolling Jubilee. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
Enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
Once again, another highly caffeinated beverage is making headlines this morning. This time, it's those shots of 5-Hour Energy. The FDA is looking into 13 reported deaths that might be related. Here's Marketplace's Shireen Marisol Meraji.
According to its ads, if you're sleepy, groggy, or need a nap,
take one 5-Hour Energy, then see what the rest of your day feels like.
Maybe not so good if you were involved in one of the 90-plus reports the FDA has on file for the drink. The FDA's Shelley Burgess says those reports include
33 hospitalizations as well as 13 deaths. And we are looking into each and every adverse event report.
This comes less than a month after the FDA said it was investigating another drink, Monster Energy.
It's probably way too early to tell whether this news will have an impact on the growth of the energy drink products.
That's John Sitcher, editor of Beverage Digest. He says, as of today, energy drinks are the only product boosting sales in a sleepy beverage industry. I'm Shireen Marisol Meraji for Marketplace.
So we have been informing you almost every day now, I think, about the latest on the fiscal cliff. Across the board, government spending cuts will kick in. The Bush tax cuts will all expire with the new year if Congress and the president can't cut a deal to address the deficit, or at least buy some time. President Obama will meet tomorrow with members of Congress to start his negotiations. Uncertainty over the looming package of tax increases and spending cuts has business leaders on edge. And one of them is Scott Davis. He is the CEO of the shipping company UPS. He talked with my Morning Report colleague, Jeremy Hobson.
Well, so what are you preparing for at UPS when it comes to the possibility of the nation going over the so-called fiscal cliff?
Well, I think, obviously there's a lot of concern that the economy has been limping along since the Great Recession, growing at 1% to 2%. And the fact that we have a self-inflicted crisis in front of us because we haven't made decisions on the debt issue is a big concern. And as everybody has talked about, if we go over the cliff, it's a huge impact to the economy and probably puts us back into a recession.
Are you having meetings, contingency meetings? Do you have whiteboards with all kinds of things that might happen there at UPS?
Well, clearly at UPS, we're always planning for the future. And we move about 6% of the U.S. GDP every day. So if we do head into a second recession, clearly it's something we have to react to. We have flexibility at UPS where we adjust our workforce based on the number of packages that we're shipping each day. So clearly, based on our customers' activity, we'll adjust our workforce.
So do you think you'd have to lay people off if we went over the cliff?
I think likely if the CBO is correct and the economy was to get hit by 4%, so go from a plus 2% economy to a minus 2% economy, that would impact our package volume, which would impact jobs.
All right, so let's say that Congress and the White House can come up with a deal. What would you like to see in that deal?
I want to see a balanced solution. I want to see a solution that involves additional revenue going forward and a solution that involves the spending cuts and the entitlement reform that we need to protect our future generations. Not easy to do, but we need a big solution, a $4 or $5 trillion solution.
Now, when you say revenue, would you be okay if taxes went up on the wealthy?
Well, I think taxes are going to have to go up, whether it's through capping deductions or rates. But I think in general, I would certainly encourage corporate tax reform and individual tax reform. The systems we have today are too complicated. They're not competitive. I think we need to change that. But the end result's got to be more revenue coming out of that.
Now, we always hear that big companies are sitting on a lot of cash right now, and as soon as they have some certainty about tax rates, for example, that they're going to go out and spend, and we'll see a big economic boom in this country. Are you one of those companies that's sitting on a lot of cash?
We are sitting a lot of cash. Now, we are in the middle of trying to close an acquisition in Europe, a sizable acquisition, but we're in a good cash position. I think all business leaders, when they have better policy certainty, you really need to understand what are the policies going to be, whether it be tax, spending, trade, energy. You want to know those policies for the next 4 or 5 years, then you're willing to make the bigger investments. And that's what we need. We need certainty of policy.
Scott Davis is CEO of UPS. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Jeremy, great being here.
So has this sense of urgency felt by CEOs like UPS's Scott Davis and lawmakers filtered down to ordinary Americans? Time for an attitude check.
And the latest poll numbers suggest
margin of error.
There is somewhat of a disconnect.
It's conventional wisdom.
Our survey said...
Attitude Check is our weekly partnership with Gallup. And with the election now behind us, Gallup has had a chance to actually survey people specifically about the fiscal cliff. Editor-in-Chief Frank Newport is here as usual. Hey, Frank.
Good morning.
Well, the media has certainly placed the fiscal cliff front and center. Does that reflect what the public is feeling?
I think so. Americans are following it closely, the news about it. More importantly, we said, how important is it that the president and Congress find a solution, an alternative, before January 1st? And we have over 80% of Americans say it's extremely or very important, and that's very high.
Now, we have adopted this fiscal cliff term that was coined originally by Ben Bernanke, but in truth, it's not like the world ends on January 1st. How do your poll respondents regard the importance of that deadline, though, January 1?
Yeah, we didn't ask if the world would end as we know it, but we did ask about its importance, and we also asked what will be the consequences if a solution is not reached, and it was surprisingly high in terms of negative impact. Americans said yes, a significant majority, it would have a major impact in the U.S. economy if an alternative solution is not found before January 1st, And most of the people they interviewed came back and said it would be a negative impact on the economy. Not all, mind you. A small minority said, hey, it might be a positive impact, but most said it would be a negative impact.
Now, I know you can't really look to the poll numbers to answer this, but do you think the media might be scaring people?
Well, that's an interesting question. And, of course, we know public opinion is a result of many different things. The average American out there doesn't have personal knowledge of what's going on in these budget negotiations and obviously doesn't know a lot about the real impact this would have. So, yes, it is news as filtered back through the media that is affecting perceptions. But, of course, if the perceptions are there, the consequences are real.
If we don't get a deal in Washington, who's going to catch the blame?
Some people have asked about who would be more likely to shoulder the blame if nothing is solved by January 1st. And the Republicans in Congress are more likely to get the blame than President Obama at this point. I should point out, though, that regardless of your political persuasion out there across this country, the people are saying both the president and the Democrats in the Senate and the Republicans in Congress should get their act together and compromise equally in order to get a solution to this problem.
Gallup's editor-in-chief, Frank Newport. Thanks, Frank.
My pleasure.
Hey, smokers, today's the day you're supposed to stop doing that. Stop it. It's the American Cancer Society's Great American Smokeout, now in its 35th year, if you can believe that. In that time, more than half of states have outlawed smoking in restaurants, bars, and workplaces. Sarah Gardner reports now on the next No Smoking Frontier, apartments.
You know that saying, my home is my castle? Well, maybe not for smokers. At least 10 cities in California have already banned smoking in apartments. And in New York City, condo and co-op boards are increasingly mulling smoking bans as well. Anti-tobacco groups argue smoke-free apartments will attract tenants and save money. Chris Banthan is a public health attorney.
Smoke-free means less maintenance costs, fewer disputes amongst tenants. It really is a positive from the landlord's perspective, and it's easy to implement.
One property insurer on the West Coast offers landlords and condo associations a 10% smoke-free discount. Smoking rights advocate Audrey Silk asks, what's next? Banning smoking in single-family homes?
They'll start with the argument that my smoking, let's say in the backyard, is migrating to my neighbor's backyard and through their windows. I put nothing past them.
And how will Silk observe today's Great American Smokeout? Maybe by smoking twice as much, she says. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Wrapping up here with a couple of quickies. You've probably heard the terms conflict diamonds or blood diamonds. Well, I'll let you guys come up with a term for these. South African police arrested a 25-year-old man who had swallowed, get this, 220 diamonds. He was attempting to board a plane for Dubai. Officials from South Africa confirm all the smuggled diamonds were recovered. All it took was time and evidently a little bit of fiber. And finally, it seemed like just a matter of time, I think, before somebody hacked one of those big electronic traffic signs. They're very common nowadays. So instead of telling motorists that a road is closed for pipeline construction, this week a digital road sign in Northern California has warned drivers that a gorilla is on the loose and reminded them to, quote, smoke weed every day. I'm Jeff Horwich, and that's all for today's Marketplace Midday Update. This is APM, American Public Media.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.